You're gonna battle me on this one?
One, two,
three,
four,
three,
seven.
No, we didn't leave three.
Who says we have to leave three?
Wait, were we doing prime numbers? You three, seven, 11?
You did jump around, but you can't imply that three is one place.
I don't. Stumped.
Before we get to numbers and math equations, let's head over to our sponsors and our affiliates. First off, we got Onnit. Onnit.com is a human optimization website. They offer amazing products such as ShroomTech Sport, ShroomTech Immune, Alpha Brain, what's the other one? HempForce Protein, New Mood. Imagine going to sleep at night, taking a supplement that's going to help make you in a better mood in the morning. From 5-HTP and L-tryptophan, things that are going to help you get to sleep faster while producing more serotonin. So when you wake up in the morning, you have a lighter and more expressed smile, and you're ready to enjoy your day, even though your life may suck. It's going to be a little more enjoyable. So head over to onthebuspodcast.com, click on our Onnit link, fill up your shopping cart, get some shopping done, and go ahead and support this podcast. Folks, we want to thank you so much to everyone who shopped through our Amazon portal in 2016. Heck, it was only one quarter of the year, but some of your purchases really went to contribute to helping this podcast. We will be even able to get much more advanced equipment. Those thanks to everyone who's made some more purchases. If you'd like to contribute and support this podcast, head over to onthebuspodcast.com, shop through our Amazon portal, just one click it. You can even favorite it as your homepage, fill up that shopping cart, and buy all the material goodies you could possibly desire. It's only one click away. Shop, shop, shop through the portal. Podcast is also brought to you by Organifi. Organifi isn't just about green juice powder, but they also have several other products, whether they're turmeric, ashwagandha supplements, as well as pre and probiotic. Daniel, you just tried some Organifi for the first time. What'd you think?
Oh, man. So I actually just had some this morning at 6:15, and that's one of the sweetest. I can't believe actually how good it is. And not only that, but I feel like my cognitive functions are on point. Like, one thing, the taste. Unbeatable, because I've never had a green drink that's like that.
It's good.
Yeah, it tastes good. But it's like I just had coffee without having coffee. From my greens, didn't know they could do that.
But now you didn't have the Organifi by itself. You had that mixed in with some hemp seeds, some hemp force protein from Onnit. You had some MCT oil. And still, normally you can't mix greens, chocolates, other powders, but no problems.
They went amazingly together, for sure.
Beautiful. So head over to OrganifiShop.com, type in promo code BUSDRIVER. That's one word, all caps, BUSDRIVER. I hope I spelled that right. And get yourself a 15% discount. Shit, you can even sign up for a subscription and get your Organifi coming in on a monthly basis. And lastly, we got the podcast is brought to you by the people over at Gopher Case. Gopher Case is a patented clip-in technology phone case with a selfie stick, lanyard, and many, many, many more featured accessories to come. We just actually spoke with them, and they're really excited about this up-and-coming technologies they have for the phone case. It's going to completely blow things out of the water. So you want to make sure you're the first people getting some Gopher cases. You want to be there before they all sell out. Head over to gophercase.com. Use promo code ONTHEBUS. That's one word, O-N-T-H-E-B-U-S. Get yourself a discount.
And now to introduce you to today's guest. Today's guest is none other than Brian Shea. Brian Shea is, well, he's been one of my best friends for a long time. He is an emotionally driven, well thought out person. He's one of those people that you meet him and he looks deep into your soul and can provide you insight about yourself you didn't even know existed. He is always asking questions and wanting to learn from people everywhere he goes, looking to share stories. He went to film school, and so you'll hear a lot in this podcast about kind of how that's a driver for him for sharing people's stories, which is a huge passion of his. He just finished a bike trip across the country, so we're just going to stop here and let Mr. Shea finish up the story for you. Mr. Shea, Brandon, grab your bike helmets. We've got a seat to ride on.
What's going on, man?
Just hanging out. Excited to be here, man.
Yeah, I'm impressed that you're able to sit down right now, dude. You just ran, was it 3,000 plus bike ride across country, and your legs still aren't that sore?
3,695 miles was the total. Yeah, I've had a couple weeks to kind of recoup and feeling pretty good now, actually.
Was it on a daily basis where you were sore, or was there like one part of that trip where you're going, you know, 300 miles, maybe 100 miles in a day where, shit, like tomorrow, I don't know if we're going to make it out tomorrow, my legs are hurting?
Yeah, definitely. There was a part of the trip where I started to worry a little bit about my physical well-being, just because like I was starting to really ache, like it was hard to walk some days, but then your legs kind of get stronger as you go. So once I got through like the middle of it, I feel like my brother and I were kind of hurting for like a good week where you really question it. But then once you get on the bike and you're like an hour in, you kind of like, you feel the pain like after, mm-hmm. like at night. Like the worst thing was some nights I would wake up and just like aching pains in my legs, like a dull pain. And that was like tough to get through. But towards the end, I didn't have it nearly as much. So I think I like hit a breaking point, like maybe like a third of the way through. And then like once I got over that, my legs started getting stronger and I just didn't feel the pain as much anymore.
It was one of those little like normal bikes, I'd say like a Tour de France bicyclist or cyclist would use. Those seats seem pretty uncomfortable though, no?
I actually put like a seat that no one would ever put on their bike because it weighed so much, but it was like more comfortable. And like everyone who like knew stuff about bicycles advised me against it, but I'm like, I'm not sitting on like one of these skinny seats for 3 months. So I just like put a little bit extra weight on the bike, and it was like an upright seat. So that's what the main thing is, like, you're not supposed to use this type of seat with this type of bike. And I was like, well, it feels good. So this is what I'm doing. Maybe not been the best, but my brother had a much worse seat than me, and he was definitely struggling some days.
Before we get into it, I mean, we're into it already, but like, why'd you do this? Why did you? Was it 3,693?
3,695 miles.
Yeah,
Ooh,
two
did,
off.
Yeah, we did Massachusetts to California over the course of 89 days. And the reason why we did it, basically, my cousin did this trip 3 summers ago. And yeah, he rode from Massachusetts to Santa Monica, same thing. And I was like, when I first heard that, I was like, what? Like, a bicycle? You can ride a bicycle across the United States? I didn't even know it was a thing. So I was just really inspired by him. He did it by himself, too. And my brother was inspired by it, too. And we kind of, like, loosely talked about it. Like, oh, that would be a cool thing to do, yada, yada. But he was in college, and I was traveling around. We never really had, like, a time where it would be good to do it. And then he just graduated from Hofstra University in May, and he was kind of looking for something to do before his student loans kicked in. He had to start paying those back and getting a job and stuff, so it was like perfect timing for us to do something together. And he graduated film school, I studied documentary film. We were like, let's make something together. And so it was an opportunity for us to do a project together, but then it was also an opportunity for us to just bond as brothers. Like, my brother's he was 6 years behind me in school, and I was always kind of more of like an authority figure to him more growing up than like a friend.
With that much year across, far from each other.
I've heard that from my youngest sibling. Like, there were times where you were so mean to me. And I was like, shit, I didn't even know. I'm sorry. I'm looking back now.
I mean, we got along good and stuff. It was just more like I wasn't hanging out with kids his age because I was so much older. So, like, I never really got to be with him as an adult. So it was kind of like we did a lot. It was many reasons. Like, obviously, just the adventure and doing something before you start a job. But then also just having the opportunity as brothers to like really get to know each other as adults, because we never really did that before, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you spend 3 months together with someone, you know, every day camping out, riding a bicycle 60 miles, like, you're going to get to know them pretty good.
Especially going through those struggles.
Yeah.
Where someone might be having a shit day. We got to keep going. We got a destination to get to.
Exactly. Yeah. Every day is an adventure. And like, it's a story, you know, like you start at point A and then you got to find out how to get to point B, and all these things happen in between that somehow, some days it's easy, some days it's tough, you know, you never know who you're going to meet. It was pretty exhilarating. I miss it, really. It was fun.
All right, so you take off on this bike trip, you guys want to make a film together, and that's it? You're just going to make a film about what?
I don't really know, honestly. I still don't know exactly. We vlogged through the whole way, and we did like 6 episodes of like 5 to 6 minutes of content, which was very film-like, like the vlog style. We just kind of shot everything. Like, we stayed with hosts along the way, on couch surfing and this thing called warm showers, which is basically like touring cyclists who host other touring cyclists.
I never heard of warm showers.
Yeah.
Was it cool?
Yeah, I hadn't either. Yeah, it's really cool. It's basically just people who tour, and when they're home, like, you basically have an app on your phone where you can look like where people are that will host, and you just message them and like if they're home. Like, the cycling community is like amazing. Like, cyclists like really understand other cyclists, like, 'cause they've done it before, you know. So it's just people giving back to the community.
I think that's what couch surfing's gotten away from, you know, because I use it because it's like shit. You know, I've been there where I'm out of money. I want to keep traveling. If I can give someone, you know, extra $20, $30, $40 in their pocket that they're not using it to accommodations, yeah, no problem. Absolutely. Yeah. Use my place. Use my bathroom. Use my futon, couch, whatever you're going to use. But, I mean, now it's just like, it's got a glitz and glamour to it. I'm glad you guys are able to find, you know, people like that. But I think, for example, this warm showers it was called.
Yeah.
When you can target a certain group or a tribe.
Yeah, exactly.
It resonates a lot more. And you're gonna get people that are gonna understand.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of luck with couch surfing too. We met some great people. But I guess when we went into it, what we wanted to do was meet as many interesting people as we could. So the whole idea was that we were going to stay with people along the way, kind of get a feel for all the different parts of the country and all the different types of people that live in these parts of the country. And so we interviewed like pretty much, I'd say like 70-80% of the people we stayed with. We sat down with them and, you know, had like an hour long conversation on camera. And then, you know, kind of just shot everything that we were going through throughout the day. We had a drone that was like following us on our bikes and stuff. And so basically a lot of the content that we captured was kind of the different geography and, you know, roads of the country, and obviously like us behind the scenes talking about stuff. Like we'd record our voices on the bikes and, you know, so like brotherly love and whatnot. But then also more of the aspect of like the people that we were meeting along the way, because we wanted to tell a story about that too.
How did you set up the drone? How is this drone following you? Something
It has a follow me mode. So I'm honestly like, I bought the drone and I gave my brother. I'm like, figure this out, because he's like gonna show that. But
yeah, is he the one fixing the bikes if they break down?
Yeah, he was the mechanic too. So like those are his jobs, was like the drone mechanic. And yeah, he would just basically, we'd get off the bikes, he'd set it like if we were going through a beautiful area or whatever, and he set it up. And then like I think it just like has a follow. It's the DJI Phantom 4, and it has like a follow me mode, so you can track it around you. And then we'd just be riding on the drone, and be following us, and it has sensors in the front, so it knows like when, like, I don't know if there's a power line, we'll like stop and beep, or like a tree or something like that. I mean, the battery's not the best on it, so like we can only do it in like 20-minute spurts. So we're pretty selective with like.
But as you know, when recording content, yeah, it's like 20 minutes
is a lot
to go back through.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
The stretch, man.
Yeah, editing 20 minutes is brutal at sometimes.
Especially when you have to listen to your own voice. Yeah. I don't know what it's like with film or following yourself on a bike.
Yeah.
Okay, very good view. Okay, and then we ran into somebody. I know you guys ran into a few other cyclists on the road. There was like one traveling monk.
Yeah, yeah. We met a ton of different types of people. That was David, is his name. He was a touring cyclist who had been in a Buddhist monastery for 18 years, and he was in silence. And he was one of the most interesting people we met, for sure. He had just come out and was kind of in shock at the state of the world, and decided to start this ride for peace and justice. Where he was kind of, it was like a 4,000 mile trip. He's still on it, actually. And he just rolled up behind us on I-40 in Arizona one day. And like when you see someone who's got their, like I had 80 pounds on my bike, like 4 saddlebags, like tent on the back, you know, a completely packed bike. And when you see someone else with a packed bike, you're immediately like, hey, where are you going? What are you, you know, because it's so rare to see someone just, on, especially at that time of year. Like, it's not that popular to tour.
Pretty cold out there.
Yeah, it was getting really cold. Yeah, so it was pretty cool to just have this guy, like, roll up behind us, and we kind of got his whole story. He ended up camping with us and stuff, and it was crazy. He said that he was in this Buddhist monastery for 18 years, and the only two things that, only two connections he had with the outside world was there was a terrorist attack in New York City, obviously 9/11, and then he was told that there a black man had been elected president in 2008, so, like, and everything else, like he like missed the internet basically.
How did he choose to hear those two things?
No, get information from him, or he was in complete silence, like no talking anything in the monastery. So like they were just like they had no contact with the outside world. But those are the two things that were like told to him, like information that came from the outside. So like the people running.
So the monastery was on lockdown too. It was just like a complete like.
I'm not really sure like how much the people running it had contact. Like I assume some people.
Was this in America or was this?
It was actually in California. Yeah, when he was telling me this, I was just assuming it was like somewhere in like Asia, Southeast Asia. But then he was like, yeah, it was like north of LA.
I just think automatically Ace Ventura, high up on a mountain, in a temple. Yeah.
But yeah, he was one of the most interesting people we met. We really connected with him, but just like seeing all the different types of people that live in this country was pretty fascinating. Like just breaking bread with like lots of different types of people, especially at the time of the election. Like we were rolling through the country at a very like interesting time where people seem pretty divided. And like the route that we chose to go, I feel it was a longer route than like the most direct route, but I feel like we got a really good feel for like the diversity within the country. Cause we started in the Northeast. We went down the coast, like kind of through like the history of the country, you know, like through Philadelphia, through DC, like down that coast into the deep South, you know, like through Alabama, through Mississippi, through all of Texas, you know, and then up to the Southwest into California. And so like we got to see a lot of diversity, which
and did
cool.
You follow the highways down, or what routes did you take coming out of not Boston, or was it just Massachusetts area?
Yeah, my hometown is called Marshfield. It's south of Boston, right on the water. Right. So we started by dipping our back tires. It's like tradition for touring cyclists to go coast to coast. They dip their back tire in the ocean they leave from, their front tire in the ocean they arrive at. So yeah, so we just dipped our back tires in our basically the beach we grew up on.
New tradition for me.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it either, but I started like researching all this stuff, and like it sounds so crazy. Like when I heard, like I said, when I heard my cousin did this, I was like, what? Like I didn't even realize you could do that. But then when you start like looking into it, like it's a fairly common thing amongst the cycling community. Like people do long tours all the time.
My dad did the cross country trip and did the dip and dip.
Yeah.
The double dip.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like a really rewarding feeling when you get to dip the front tire in the Pacific Ocean and you're like, holy shit, like just went coast to coast on a bicycle.
What city did you dip in the Pacific?
Santa Monica. Santa Monica. Yeah, so we went to LA and dipped the front in the Pacific there. And yeah, it all kind of comes full circle.
Does it end like Forrest Gump where you just kind of, you feel like, okay,
I'm gonna go home.
Where am I supposed to go now? Like, yeah. I guess I'm done.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that. Like they say that there's this like when we're staying with the warm showers people, obviously they had experiences touring, and I'm a noob, so like when I was just talking to people about like, you get really excited, you know, because you both share the same passion, and like several people said like, oh, be careful, like when you end, they say that there's, you know, a little post, like post-tour depression, like a lot of people fall into that. I'm thinking like, oh, my lifestyle, you know, I'm always kind of bouncing around, I'm always having adventures, and like I think I'll be fine. But there definitely is a feeling of like, oh, it's over, man. Like you want that. There's a rush that you get every day if you're waking up and just doing something like adventurous, like where you don't know what's going to happen. And like it wears on you. Like after several, you know, months of just being on the road every day, you're like, you kind of want to just like order some wings and get some beers and watch some football and be comfort like around like your pet or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, but I mean, the rush you get from it is, at least for me, I definitely got adrenaline from it that, like, I sort of crave now being back in my, you know, everyday life.
No, this is my next thing. Like, any adventure, the hardest part is the end. What do I do now? Where do I go? What am I going to fill all those amazing times with? Like, for example, I was in South America in 2015, and I'm just meeting some other backpackers. We're taking an alternate route to get to Machu Picchu, whether it's hiking or hitchhiking or just getting a colectivo. No plan for the next day. Just like, okay, we're supposed to be here, get this done, and all right, let's go this way today. Let's go this way today. It's not like a way of let's go to the store today. It's like, how are we going to get to this next place? And not being able to answer that question and just filling your day with just the unknown. And then coming back, it's like, okay, I'm sitting in a house now in a suburb. It's mom's house, and okay, I can go get food out of the refrigerator. I don't have to worry about running into town and make sure my bag's got a banana in there for some food, or to worry about this or that. It's like emptiness.
Yeah, I know. It's like everything. I feel like the way we live is like, it's the practical way to do things. It's like you have to make money, you have a job, you know, you're like living in this sort of 9-to-5 world, and it seems normal. But then once you go out and you kind of have that life of adventure, at least for me, I feel like, well, this is the way that I'm supposed to be doing my life. And I'm supposed to be just kind of figuring it out, because you're learning so fast. Like when you put yourself in situations like that, your growth is like happening at a much different rate than when you're kind of just in your everyday life and like doing what you're expected to do. So
it's much more controlled when you're in these environments here. I mean, out there, whether it's, you got a completely different language you understand or you don't understand. So you got to take in two different forms of language. And that's just not going into the depth of language, because a certain language is developed through culture. Or maybe it's developed a religion. Now I got to try and understand that when I want to speak something and translate it over to another word. And that just means in terms of communication. Now we're talking weather, buses coming on time, being late, cabs, not having a place to stay tonight, having to communicate with complete though, strangers. Yeah. It's the best.
Yeah, it's like some of the days are hard too when things and plans don't work out the way you want them to work out. But that was one of the biggest lessons of the trip, was kind of just letting things unfold as they want to, and just kind of knowing and having a faith that, like, okay, this seems really shitty now. Like, how are we going to get, we're not going to make it to where we're supposed to get to. But, like, just knowing that something's going to happen that's supposed to happen, and that, like, is going to teach me something, and this is happening for a reason. And I know that sounds crazy to some people, but I think that, like, going through life without that resistance to kind of just what's happening now, it opens up spaces for, like, great things to happen. And we had a lot of examples of that on our trip, where, like, we were supposed to be here and the plan said this, but then, like, this happened, or, like, we had an issue with the bike and we ended up here, but then we met this person, and it kind of, like, I don't know, it just set us on a different path, but it was, like, it felt right in the end, you know? And you, like, can't realize that always in the moment, because in the moment you're judging it as, like, bad or good or whatever, but instead you just kind of have to, like, look at it as this is the way things are and just, like, let things unfold. And when we did that, it was just better, you know?
There's amazing, of all people, Dan Bilzerian mentioned this on Rogan's thing. It was like an old Chinese, whether it be a proverb or story.
Mm-hmm.
An example is of this one farmer. I think he had a son, and the son hurt himself. And people were like, oh, this is terrible. How are you going to get your crops in? I don't know what's going to happen to you. He said, we'll see. And then some event happened. And once that event happened, like, the military happened to come in. They were drafting soldiers. His son's leg was hurt, and so they couldn't draft him. He's like, oh, look, it's amazing. It's a blessing. Your son got hurt. He didn't have to go to the army. Like, we'll see. Maybe. We don't know. And then something happened to his son. He ended up, like, dying or something. Or something happened to the father. It's like, oh, this is terrible. Oh, my God. Why did you let him go? You don't know what's going to happen. You can't say whether it's going to be good or bad in that initial moment. I have a story I've told, I'm sure. We're walking on the side of a mountain. We decide not to take a cab. It's not going to take that long to get to the next city. We're on the side of the Andes. And the cab driver drives by, and then we realize, shit, it's actually getting a little dark now. Maybe we're not going to get there in time tonight. We might have to be camping with no camping material on the side of this mountain. And like you say, in that moment, you're like, all the bad habits, bad ideas, they start rushing to you. We're not going to get this done. Oh my God, what are we going to do tonight? Do we run back this way? We're halfway through now. But I mean, luckily enough, some guy shows up with a truck. There's a bunch of miners are taken home. They let us jump in the back. And it's a cool way to end the day right there.
Yeah,
and you get to play some time.
It's kind of like you just have to have faith in the moment.
I think, like, retrospectively too, when you look back on those moments, you, like, go back and look at your entire life, those are the moments you'll always...
Never going to forget
that. Yeah, you're never going to forget. Like, we were in Costa Rica together, and we experienced an earthquake.
Yeah.
And in that moment, right, I'm thinking tsunami's coming, people are going to die, I'm going to die, right? But when you look back on it, I really think that that's, like, one of the most important moments of my life, where
everything becomes way more real in that moment too,
for sure. And very, very, very real. Like, I looked out into the ocean, and at the moment the earth stopped shaking, and I looked out, I'm like, tsunami, like, we need to go. We need to get to the top of the mountain.
Higher ground.
And now when I think back, like, I consider that one of the best days of my life, right? I think, like, I experienced something that I probably will never experience again, or not at that level. And then I shared these moments with friends. Like, we went up to a mountaintop with 25 people. We had to get in the back of someone's truck. The truck was barely going up the mountain, and with a bunch of us in the back with all of our stuff. We brought our passports, and like, when you get up there, then we're in someone's pool on a mountaintop, like, wondering if anything crazy is gonna happen to our stuff. So I look back and I go, yeah, that's, like, one of the best days of my life. And I get to share that with other people. And I bet they look back and they go, they don't think about that moment that they were in, like, how scary it is. They think back and think kind of how I thought about it.
Yeah, it was kind of cool too, because I remember for me, that I had just moved to Costa Rica then. And, like, that was where there was a bunch of poker players in town. And that event kind of, because there was one kid who had a house where basically it was, like, up on the hill. So mm-hmm. then, like, all these poker players ended up, like, in this guy's house, which was just, like, the safety spot. And it was kind of like you were meeting all these other guys. So it was, like, and we just chilled there all day because we weren't supposed to go back down towards the water. So it was, like, you know, a crazy event. But then it was, like, this moment of, like, everyone coming together and be like, oh, how long have you been here? Like, oh, and you were meeting all these new people. It was just kind of a cool way to end the day.
Yeah.
It's great how we're able to talk about, you know, like you said, a natural disaster, something that's killed millions upon millions of people, but it's something that was able to draw, you know, whether it was you two or the 20 or 30 or even all those other poker players that were in that area, it helped grow a greater connection, and it's a moment that you can look back on and remember. Those hardships, the things that we try to disconnect ourselves from on the everyday level, an everyday basis. Like, no, I don't want to have to go worry about where I'm getting my food from. But if you had to go out and find your food, what a great experience it possibly might be. And we're going to remember those experiences, remember the hardships, remember the time that, you know, your bike broke down, your brother couldn't fix it in the tire, but you ended up in, I don't know, on the trip, on a great location, meeting those distinct people in that place that you wouldn't have met before. It's the things that are unplanned. Just like with me jumping in the back of that truck with those miners in Peru. Like, I'm always going to remember that, and I want to remember that. And it's just finding a way to connect to the hardships in those difficult times. Because even it can be shown that people are much more, they get much more drawn together better after a natural disaster. You can see in New York City after 9/11, people just being much more nicer together in a place where it's much more hostile, much more hustle and bustle, but people saying hi to each other now, looking out for each other. You know, remember the firefighters, remember the troops. And you, why does it take a natural disaster sometimes for people to get that connection again?
Yeah, it's like, all right, we remember our humanity when things like that happen. And I would say to people, I feel like when it comes to adventure, they want to be so calculated. And I feel like it's very important to kind of have like a rough plan, but not be too like planned, because a lot of those times the spontaneous adventures are the best, you know, when you kind of just like plan as you go. Like, we would always have kind of a rough plan, like 4 days in advance. We'd be like, okay, hit up some hosts, like we're gonna go in this direction, and then kind of whoever would say we could stay with them is like where we would end up. But we were never like too planned out. People like, what route are you taking? We're like, ah, we're headed this way, you know what I'm saying? So like, we always kind of left time for, if we were gonna meet someone and it was a good story that we could capture, we were gonna like just kind of let that happen, so that we weren't too planned, where it was too rigid, where we couldn't just let things unfold spontaneously.
Yeah, I think that's why like long-term adventures, like something for an extended period of time, is so much more connecting to where you're going. Like a weekend in Honolulu, you have to plan everything, right? You have everything for 2 or 3 days planned out where you're going. It's needed to condense kind of the adventure, make sure you get a sense of where you're going. But when you live on the road, like done things like you've done, Brandon's traveled throughout Kuwait and just hopped on a he's just hopping on a trip to Mexico next week. And when you go an extended period of time, you really, without kind of a strict plan, then you could just go in a different direction and let the adventure take you on. Something horrible happens, you get to fight through it, and that's the great part of the adventure.
Yeah, without a doubt.
No horrible things are going to happen, but those are the things, again, it's out of your control. And once you let that control down, you let those guards down, then comes the fun.
Yeah.
Now, without a doubt. This whole Live High thing, is that your company?
I wouldn't necessarily call it a company. Because, like, I don't know, it sort of just started as, like, a thing with friends where, the guys here in South Florida basically started their Fourth Floor High. It was, like, a college t-shirt type deal they were doing, so it was kind of a company. And then, in the poker community, like, my group of friends sort of started wearing it, and it was kind of just associated with our group of friends. And I just sort of took it and tried to, like, rebrand it as, what I believe, like, Live High is all about, which is just following your passion, doing what you love, you know, living in the moment. And so that's kind of what the brand is all about. And, we still have like t-shirts and hats and stuff, but I'm not as concerned with like the business side of things as much as I am with just creating content that, you know, inspires people or tells good stories or entertains people. And, you know, just the message behind it is just to do what you love. So with this, I mean, this trip was basically kind of kickstarted the whole thing. It's like kind of a living example of just going on adventure and just being passionate and meeting people. And, So that's kind of what this trip was all about, was just kind of living the message behind Live High. And I know more than anything, I think of it as just kind of a blog and a place on the internet to kind of just spread good vibes. You know, I mean, the brand, I feel like, has a pretty positive message, and it's mostly been my brother and I who've been working on it. But I kind of look at it more as like a community type thing, like just people who are on the internet and want to spread good vibes and want to tell their stories. Like, there's a space on the website for basically people to write and share and create media. And it's been mostly myself and my brother, like I said, who's been creating the media for it, but I kind of want it to be a collaborative type project.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said this is the Kickstarter. There was no projects before this. And what are the next projects that you guys have shipped up for this?
What I've been doing for the last few years in my travels is basically trying to find people who embody the message of Live High, which is just people who do what they love. So, I mean, I have a background in documentary film, so that's what I studied, and I love telling stories. So basically what I do is whenever I find these people when I'm traveling, I sit down with them, kind of have a conversation similar to this, only on video, and then I cut together like 2 to 3 minute videos. They're kind of like commercials for the brand, where they just like tell like little stories of people who are just living high, basically just doing what they love.
What kind of questions you got, like the people that you're meeting, what kind of questions are you asking them?
There's always like a set of questions that I pretty much ask everyone, but I try and make it very podcast like so it's more just we're having a conversation, and like it's not like I'm the interviewer and you're answering my questions. Yeah, it's sure. More like we just turn the camera on and we just kind of shoot the shit for like an hour. Mm-hmm. And I always ask people like, how do you define passion, how do you define love, like just like basic things like that to everyone, usually towards the end of the interview. But it's always more just like getting them comfortable and then talking about whatever it is that they do. And you'll find that when you're talking to someone who's passionate about something, you don't even really need to ask them too many questions. You kind of just got to guide them in the direction of like what they want to talk about, and they just do everything, the work for you kind of thing.
Exactly.
And it's fun because I'm always talking to people who are just like alive, and I do it like it's selfish in a way. Like I do it to share with people, but I also do it for myself because I find that when I'm meeting these types of people, it like it makes me inspired. It makes me just having these conversations with people who are doing stuff. It's like, okay, I need to continue to do stuff that I love, because like look at this person who's just like completely like their whole life revolves around something that they love to do, and they've found a way to make it lucrative for themselves. Or some people who even haven't, and that's even more impressive when you run to someone and they haven't quite found a way to make it like their like life in terms of like making money, but they're like doing something else, and then they're funneling all their energy into something that they love that they're not getting necessarily even paid for.
There's a few of those. Whether they're cyclists, they travel for a living.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's they just sleep in the middle of the woods. They have no camping equipment, no nothing, or maybe they have one bicycle that they use to get around. But like you said, they have no means of going out and writing about it or blogging about it or generating any kind of revenue. They're just really happy with this. Maybe it's the simplest form of being a human being in this civilization, our culture today, but it's what they do. And like you say, you pick up on that energy when someone starts talking about it. You can see, oh man, look at that passion, desire. They're going. And it gives you a smile. Just, oh man, you just, it's hocus pocus. Some people like to say, like, you can't feel energy and you can't see it. You don't know what it is, but like, you can pick up on it. You just, like you say, you feel inspired. And you feel uplifted, like, oh man, you know, I have that drive now. I have that drive to go do something. You know, I'm really inspired of whatever this person's doing. It doesn't have to be the same exact thing, but you can look inside yourself and see, man, I can question myself and what it is I want to do now and what I see is important for me.
Yeah, I think we just naturally kind of pick up on the vibration that someone gives off who's just completely, like, super passionate about whatever it is they're doing. It's like you kind of feel it when you're in their presence, and you know, just having these conversations with these people, it made me feel something that, like, just being around that type of person, it like it kind of gives you energy, it gives you creative energy, and I like that. It's like fun to meet people like that. Mm. So like, and when you're traveling, you end up meeting a lot of people like so that, you know. So it's like almost like it's like too much. It's like, oh, I've met a lot of people that I'd like to profile that I haven't profiled yet, but yeah, it's just kind of been like a fun project that I've been doing sort of in my free time over the last 3 years, and now it's all kind of starting to materialize. It's tough when you're working on something by yourself too, you know, like that's why I want to get other people involved. You know, I've had to like kind of divvy my time between making money and working and traveling, and you know, obviously like my relationships, my family, my girlfriend, and then trying to also create something that I'm passionate about. But this trip definitely kind of added some energy to it. Now that my brother's kind of, he just graduated, like I said, and that he's getting involved, like I feel like it's picking up some steam. So it's been pretty fun.
So you got a great pitch. You've let everybody know what you need, where your help's from. What's the criteria now? People want to know what it's going to take to live high. How do they join the team?
I mean, I just think it starts small. Like we have a Facebook group. Just go into the website, hit me up. Like I'm very responsive to messages. So I'm sort of just, I kind of put a blog post out there that I'm just like looking to connect with creative people who, you know, kind of see, I guess, the state of the world right now and just want to put out like pure content, just like create videos and media that empowers people and just kind of inspires people and brings people together and puts out a positive message. Like this isn't about money at all to me. Not to say that I wouldn't want to make money doing what I love. Like I definitely would love to make this thing lucrative. Mm-hmm. But the intention behind it, like when you said company, like I don't know. Not that there's anything wrong with companies, but my immediate like connotation with company is like business, money, like, and there's nothing wrong with business and there's nothing wrong with making money, but just the intention behind this primarily is just about like putting out good vibes into the internet. And that's what I'm, you know, storytelling is what I'm super passionate about. So I do it the way that I do it is by meeting people and telling their stories and hoping that their stories can somehow influence other people in a positive way.
What's great is you exemplify everything you're looking for. You know, someone who studied film, it's something you love to do, being a storyteller, and you doing what you love every day and then trying to find that within other people. So it's like perfect for what it is you're trying to do, and you found a way to do it so far. Like you said, the lucrative part of film.
Yeah, I mean, it's a struggle, you know, and I try to, you know, be what I'm, you know, the message that I'm putting out, but even at times it's hard. Like, I'm far from perfect, and I find myself being lazy about it, or having to, like, you know, being in my own head, not being in the moment, not always being like what Live High represents, you know, but it's just always trying to work towards that and trying to put it out there the best that I can,
you know. Isn't that being it though, when you're working to improve it? Isn't when you're working to put out content and share those things, even if you're not doing it perfectly, I think that is actually the embodiment of what you're explaining, like understanding that we aren't going to be that perfect human. We're not going to always be able to make the kind of money that we're looking for, but as long as we're working to improve it, then we get to share that with another people. I mean, that is the embodiment to me.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I agree.
For a reflective moment.
Yeah.
Pause for reflection. Let's see. This or that.
And this or that. I mean, Brian Che, you are one of the most heartfelt people that I know, for sure. So every moment that we get to share together is, for me, has always been like a blessing. So, I mean, that's aside from this podcast. Like, just listening to you speak sometimes is just like, I feel like this guy with this, you have like this illumination about you, and it's not even like about you. It's because you're trying to learn from other people, right?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the kind words, man. But even for myself, like, I'm always in a constant struggle, battle, like learning as a human being. So like, I find that being around people like you who are willing to listen and want to have these conversations, like, I need people like that in my life, you know, because it's easy to get wrapped up in, you know, societal pressures and, you know, the things that are going on in our world right now, and kind of forget about, like, you know, like these heartfelt conversations and like connecting with people like this, you know, because I see like some of my best sides come out at times when I'm around people who share the same vibration as me. And I see some of my worst sides come out, you know, when I'm, you know, wrapped in my ego, or, you know, getting in a stupid argument with someone, you know, like, I still experience, you know, the dark sides of myself, the light sides of myself. So like being around people like you who are, you know, doing similar things, putting good vibes out, like, it brings out, you know, the light in myself. You know,
it's alleviating, yeah. Right? Just talking to other people that are on that vibration that we're talking about is alleviating. There's like something intrinsically human about it that is hard to touch on. Like, we can call it energy and vibes, like we were talking about. Like, I do think there's something scientific about it. There is something where, body language, right? They say what body language is. I don't know what the percentage is. Like 90% of everything that we do. So I know it's and an energy level, but I also do think there's something built into us, like through evolution or whatever, that is means we do need to be deeply connected to each other in order to share experiences and to go about life in a, and I guess happiness is like a kind of a vague broad term, but I would use that as a perfect description here. Like, those connections create happiness. How many people do you know that go around and they're like buying a car or working hard.
We try to stick to a plan. I'm 27 now. It's time for me to go do this and do that. But it's like, do you want to do that? Or is that something that's being told to you? Is that something that you've seen someone else do? And again, that's who we are as humans, the traits we've developed that we see other people, whether they've had success or security and they've gotten to a certain age. Well, I'm going to try and mimic that same thing because that's got this human being to a higher advanced age than I am. And I want to, my cells are just trying to stay alive and survive and be fit. So I'm just going to keep following and doing what's safe inside the civilization, the societal culture, norms. So I'm going to do that. That seems like the right thing to do, instead of asking and looking deeper and saying, is this what I want to do? Is this what's going to make me happy? Is this peace or possession? But I mean, that's also, as a fellow traveler, I wanted to ask you, what's been your biggest societal challenge? Or like, we touched on it about it just a few seconds ago, like the thing that someone's come at you and said, like, what, you're this years old, you're this age, why aren't you doing this now? Or, you know, why are you just traveling around the world? Because I get those questions thrown at me, whether it's from family, friends. Don't you think it's time to slow down now?
All the time, yeah.
Yeah, I don't I totally get that. And I think I've kind of learned to not let other people's opinions, at least I might care about them, but not enough for it to change living from my heart. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it is tough. I find that more of the challenge is trying to do something that I feel is pure and good and still like be able to support myself doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is kind of a challenge because I feel like there's a lot of things that I could do and I feel like I'm kind of like selling my soul for cash, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't want to like fall into that where I'm just like trying to, I always want to define success more in terms of like my happiness and the impact that I'm having on the people around me instead of like success in a business sense. Because whenever you hear people say, oh, he's really successful, it's like, okay, what does that mean?
You can manipulate numbers really well.
Yeah, he's really good at something that's making him some money. That's what most of the time, you know, I think people really define good success at the truth. Yeah.
Success should be like, do I think I'm successful?
Yeah, right? And I think also in more in terms of just like money. Like it's, I think a lot of success is like, how do you treat the people around you and how your relationships with the people around you and how do you interact with your community? You know, it's not just necessarily like business success. And I'm not saying business success is bad or anything. I'm just saying that's just one element of success. And if that's the only success you have, I feel like you could be bankrupt in a lot of other areas of your life, you know? So I'm always more so looking for like the balance of success.
But what are one of the tough societal factors and norms that you face when you travel? No, it's one
when I travel?
Or just living the life that you live, you know, having to worry about, you know, okay, I should be doing this at this age. Is there something that in your mind or in your head that you're maybe not plagued with, but something you ponder or question all the time? Maybe I should be doing this now. Maybe I should be doing that.
I mean, there's a whole other lifestyle that I definitely think, and it's not that I couldn't be myself and still have a positive impact from that lifestyle, but it's like that the more settled down expected lifestyle, like you know, getting into a serious relationship, maybe having kids, maybe doing the thing, buying a house. But then there's a part of it, and there's a lot of good things that come with that lifestyle, but then there's a part of me that thinks about it as like almost being trapped and not like, because I feel like I'm always supposed to be moving. And I feel like that's like, I don't know, I'm passionate about storytelling, I'm passionate about travel. There's this great article that I read about like your passion lies at the three things that you have curiosity about, like in the middle of that. And I know like stories and travel are like two big things, and like so when I combine those, I start to get the creative juices flowing. And I worry that maybe settling down and buying a house or being in one place, I might lose some of that. And so I struggle with that a little bit, because, you know, like I have a girlfriend and I love her, and like, you know, I love my family, and like I want to be around them more. So there's like that pull, obviously, but then there's like the pull of like my heart that says like, you know, I can have a, I can follow my passion and have a real impact on people and do something that I love and learn at a much higher rate. I feel like the times where I've been traveling and, you know, being in different cultures and trying to learn a different language and putting myself in the types of days that I had on this bike trip, like my growth feels very accelerated, and I feel energized too. Like I feel like I'm a better version of myself when I'm living my life like that. So I guess there's that struggle. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, 'cause I feel very, very similar in that aspect. You know, it's like, am I controlling now where I'm getting my learning and my experience from? Because like, I want to be on the road, I want to be out, I want to be doing this and doing that, but in turn, I'm not able to go through or experience maybe the hardship of owning a house. Because that, again, that's a whole new experience, something I have no idea how to do, what to do, you know, getting a mortgage, paying for all that, having a child. That's just, and everybody you hear who has one, and has a kid, just like the incredible experience that they have. Is that me, you know, avoiding that? Is that me going on the road and traveling and doing those things? Because again, I haven't really connected with family in this long and being able to live down here, you know, and live with dad, someone I haven't lived with in 10 years, and just going out to dinner or talking or smoking a joint together. It's not like, where has this been? I don't want to look back and reminisce and say, I could have had all this, but now that I get to have it, it is great. And it only, I wouldn't say it makes it hard, but because you do see that reaction and satisfaction on their face when they get to see your happiness and doing the things you love to do. like for you, traveling and filmmaking, mm-hmm. I'm sure your family is ecstatic when they get to see or even get to experience with you, like with your yeah. girlfriend or your brother coming on the road with you.
Yeah, I mean, they're very supportive. Like, I'm definitely lucky in that regard that I had. I think my parents were a little worried about the trip. I mean, how could you not be, like, just two kids who have no idea, like, never rode a bike before
both
riding that long.
Both sons there, yeah. You know what I mean? Both sons.
But I think they're excited, too. Like, one of the things we did is my mom is a second grade teacher. And one of the things both my brother and I are super passionate about is just youth and inspiring youth. And just getting in. I love kids. Like, I don't necessarily want to be a father, but being, like, an uncle, like, and, you know, being able to be around them on your time more is, like, really, yeah. I, like, love it. Like, I love interacting with little kids.
Oh,
and
you get to be their poison sometimes. My sister gets so mad at me sometimes. Like, Jace, let's go run around and then just be crazy. She's like, nope, listen, he's got a thing called dinner and bedtime. You can't do this yeah. right now or he's not going
to
get the best.
He's not allowed around his nephew.
Yeah. It's fun, though. And so we actually had these kids track our trip. And they were, like, Snapchatting with us and Skyping with us as we were going.
That's so cool.
So, like, we'd be waking up and we'd have Snapchats from, it was 7-year-olds and 9-year-olds. Like, my mom teaches second grade and they're, like, paired with a 4th grade class. And so they'd basically be like, oh, you can do it. Like, don't worry about your flat tire. And we'd have these little kids, like, cheering us on. And they're, like, super excited about it. And so that was, like, a whole other dimension of the trip that just kind of, like, added so much value for the both of us. Because we know it had an impact on them. And then, like, just getting to Skype with them, and they'd ask us questions and stuff. And like one of the little kids in the class, like he told his mom that all he wanted for Christmas was a Live High hat. So
no
I like
way.
Yeah. So it was like it was so cool. So I like sent him a Live High hat with like a letter like thanking him and like gave him Live High stickers to like hand out and like spread the message and stuff. And like just having like a positive impact on kids is like something that, like I said, I'm really passionate about. It was just like made it way more fun for me.
No, I can relate to that with sports.
Yeah.
And having,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Some kid just, I want to come with the Brandon Reese shirt and say, can you sign this? And that was like my lifelong thing. You know, experience that with Michael Jordan. And I had a whole episode with Glenn Rice. Like, he came up to me, you want me to sign this? Like, nah, listen, man, I'm waiting for Michael Jordan. Like, it's okay. Go ahead. He's going to come out. He's like, listen, Michael Jordan's not coming out, man. I'll sign this for you. I'm like 4 or 5 years old. Like, listen, man, trust me. He's on his way. I'm here. He's going to come out any second now. Don't worry. Mom's like, listen, sign this piece, sign this, sign that. We'll take anything you want to sign. And then all like 5 or 6 years later, I was at Glenn Rice basketball camp. And my mom's walking in the gym. And Glenn Rice was outside. He's walking in the gym as well. She's talking about it. She's like, yeah, you guys look familiar. There's this kid inside. He looks really familiar as well. He's like, yeah, it's the kid who didn't want your autograph 5 years ago. He's like, oh, my God, I never forgot him. I always remembered him.
Really? Oh, my God.
And so because yeah. he said – way back when it happened when I was 4 or 5 years old, I hope one day, and I always remember that, like, I can be as good as Michael Jordan. This kid was going to want my autograph. So having that experience and just a fan, it was unbeatable. And the great thing about today with the connectivity of whether it's through social media, telecommunications, the internet, that, you know, there can be a fan of anything and everything. You know, your plumber could make a whole plumbing website, you know, because he's this good at plumbing. And someone could be a fan and could be fascinated with the tools and traits it is to become a plumber. And people just wanted to show that affection, love, whether it's someone just saying, hey, great job, man. Yeah, I really love and enjoy what you do. Whether it could be a form of art for anybody. And the fact that we can learn about all these things and be aware of them now, it only makes everybody feel that much better sometimes.
Yeah, the content revolution, I think, has the information age. Social media has a lot of like negative things that we can look at it and say about it, like how it's taking us away from some of our true conversations with each other. But it also has a lot of positive impact. Like, I think we are in a content revolution where someone can, you know what I mean, get information from a plumber. And I think that it's only going to open up a little bit more, especially when you have a way for every single person to share how they feel with everybody else. And we're just kind of taking a dabble into that now. So
I'm excited. I'm hopeful for the future.
Yeah, I am too. And I think there's a lot of different ways that it could go, but it just takes, I think it takes just kind, compassionate people who are aware. And like, it's scary because there is like this very me thing about social media too, that like you worry about like the way that our technology is like evolving with us in maybe a negative way as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm very hopeful for the future as well, too, just because I think we're super, super capable as a species. Like, I think that there's so many good things that's happening, and a lot of times the bad things that happen make so much noise that they drown out the good things that are happening. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just what you choose to tune into.
So where do you see our species 150 years from now?
I'm not qualified to answer that question.
It's a safe answer, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I see like some John Lennon utopia in our future if we want it. But I just think it takes enough people kind of tapping into like that vibration of like good and like their best selves. And like sometimes I walk through the world and I'm like, wow, this is never going to happen. And you're walking through the mall and you're just seeing the different types of people that there are. And you're just like, we're so disconnected, even though all the technology is there for us to like learn and grow together. And then there's other times where I'm around people like yourselves or I'm at a festival and I'm just like, wow, human beings are amazing. Like if we just get our shit together, we could create an unbelievable world. And then, you know, and I think like we want to point fingers at like people who are like holding us back from it, but they're like a part of us, you know? So even like the people that I think of, it's like maybe have like someone like Trump that everyone's just so upset that he's president. It's like, he's a human being too. Like,
yeah.
And I think the answer at the end of the day is love. Like you got to love people for their flaws. And like, instead of being divisive and like saying like, these are the bad guys, these are the good guys. It's like, we just got to find a way to, you know, bring out the good in everyone.
But that's where the good comes from. It comes from the bad. It comes from that contrast. And like we talked about, natural disasters or these crazy moments that lead to these beautiful things happening. And it's unfortunate sometimes we need a natural disaster or something getting completely wiped off the map for people to realize and say, oh shit, you know, we don't want this to happen again. But again, as things happen, being a human being, we lose touch, we lose sight, and we push our limits and bounds, but that's what it is to be a human being. And it's hopefully it doesn't take that to happen. We can reach those beautiful moments and that beautiful place where all of us are connected together. Ran away there. I didn't.
Yeah. No, honestly, it could just be an early point in like social connection through these apps and these things. I think that it could be a great thing, right? It's early on in its evolution and it's brand new and we haven't found a way for it to actually connect us on a, in a perfect level. Right now, it's using kind of the dopamine hits for us to get attracted to it, but it could turn into something and where we do get to connect with people. Like imagine VR where I can meet with someone. Like right now I have to travel to Africa to, if I want to go help somebody, go build them a house, right? Imagine if I could hop in a virtual headset and I can be with that person and I can, Brandon could teach them basketball or I can help them learn business or you can share with them your, show them your bike story, right? So it has potential to actually bring us a lot closer. Yeah. And I do think that it's just in an early stage where like, okay, right now it's drawing us apart from each other. We haven't figured out how to utilize it to perfection.
Totally agree. I mean, if that's, I heard a lot of people talk about it, like it has a way, it would have a way to really increase empathy if we could use it in that way. I mean, I'm not way up on the technology of VR to know exactly the way it works, but if that is the case, I could totally see that. Like that's why I have hope, is because I see us and we're able to create these unbelievable things. And it's like, you don't know what we're capable of creating in the future. So you have no idea like how that could affect our evolution. Like if you told someone about the internet 30 years from now, or just the idea of sending video through the air, sending messages through the air on a device that you're going to have in your pocket at all times, it would just sound like some crazy, like science fiction movie that, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. like we could create anything that we know is capable right now that could complete, that could save us. Either that or, you know, the aliens could come and save us. Who knows? Yeah.
I don't think they're there. All right. I think
I've done the math. They're there.
We're the only ones. That's it. We're all alone. This is the center of the universe. And each person is the center of their own universe.
Yeah, man.
And it just doesn't matter, especially if it's constantly and always will continuously expand. We're always in the middle. It stems out from where we start and where we end.
Or maybe what we define life as. Like, we don't. We only see life as like moving, like maybe there is alien intelligence that we can't really perceive as because the way we define life.
I believe that.
I believe like if there's different dimensional planes. Each dimensional plane, we don't have a perspective and understanding mentally of what happens in that, you know, just we don't know the math and the rules we have of science right now to the physics to say this is what happens in this law in the third dimension or fourth dimension, which we can perceive and understand. But when you get to the fifth dimension, and a certain, you know, you add a different line and angle to a cube of something, and it's like you're looking at it and you're trying to make it in a three-dimensional plane, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, well, the human eye can only detect so much light. The exactly. ear can only hear certain ranges of frequencies. So, like, there could be so much going on around us all at all times that we just can't even tap into.
And if everything we're looking at already is upside down anyways, and it reflects back in through our retinas, and if everything's actually upside down, and we're just looking at a world that's just perceived for us to understand in a certain way, just the way our minds are built.
Yeah, like if
we know nothing.
Yeah, for sure. If like a piece of if you had a piece of paper up and you try to put a line through it, right? The only thing that paper is going to see is one point of the pencil going through. So that could be the same way as us seeing. Well, that's why I think like I can't say that a god or a higher creature doesn't exist. A higher dimensional creature could be a god. We could be in a matrix. We could be all those things, and they could be passing through, and we're only just gaining a piece of their light. They could be the vibration that we're seeing. So I'm not willing to like say one way or another in that great question, you know.
Well, it stems back to free will. And do you believe that, you know, there's like determinism? Yeah. And do you believe that? Because I think if you look into a outside planet Earth into a broader perspective, whether you're looking at aliens or whether you're looking at a higher power or deities, you're trying to say that someone has a say or there's control or someone has a higher intelligence or being than we have. And that's going to determine what's going to happen over here. So if those people show up one day, or those things, then this is going to happen. Or when we die, someone already determined what's happening. You know, someone whether
you know. So it's control.
Whether it's you know, whether it's Mormonism or whatever way is right or wrong. If there is a right way, then it was always controlled and it was always that way because it was written that way because that's what we live. We live the way that somebody had planned this whole system, intelligent design.
Or someone could have designed the system but still given you free will.
Or someone's just trying to say, like, oh, I told you so. Like,
we've never had a choice.
I feel like that's people's reason for doing things sometimes is, like, create a system in their brain so that way if they're right, they can say, you know what I mean? I told you so. I was right this whole time. And that could be the same way about some of these religious structures. Yeah, that's my two cents.
But I mean, it's like I said, when you're talking about planet Earth and what's determined just on one planet, and they don't even want you to describe space as an infinite anymore because there is a time where it's going to possibly retract back in, the big crunch or something like that it's called, and it's going to come back
in. We're infinitely expanding and then coming back
together. It's going to collapse on itself, yeah. And that's what they believe each Big Bang is universe collapsing and then re-expanding back in on itself. That's what it would take for one explosion to happen if the entire thing got cold enough and compressed back down into one thing.
I think it's I've read that it could be black holes. So every black hole that comes together is actually a new universe being created, like a new Big Bang, and all the matter and energy that it sucks in is actually creating a new universe. So every black hole that we see in our universe actually leads to a bubble of universe, so where there are bubbles of universes, like infinite amount of them.
Yeah, I appreciate all of this stuff. I'm fascinated every time I hear someone who's way smarter than me talk about it. I'm like, wow, this is what's happening. But then, and I go down this like rabbit hole of like possibilities of what everything could be, and then I always kind of come back to the same conclusion, yeah. That like I'm supposed to live within this mystery and not try so hard to figure it out. But instead, just like be a part of it and in the moment. And it's fun to go down and I love these conversations, but I somehow end up at that, you know.
Way to center us.
Yeah, that's how I feel at the end of it. Yeah.
You get away with that, especially, for sure. I feel as a young man, is like hearing about religion and hearing about that this is the way it is, how it's going to be. And it's like, I don't know, you know. And I think a lot of young people end up becoming atheists or agnostics because they don't want to... they don't want to be pool themselves and say that this is what I am, this is who I am. There's nothing, because this is the only tips and tools or the ideas that are out there, whether it's, you know, a certain kind of religion, or Christianity, Judaism, Muslim, Islam, Hinduism. This is how it is, and this is how it is. But it's like, oh, once you get out there and you continue to grow and have a greater perspective of what happens and goes on, you realize, I really don't know. I don't have the answers. I don't know that there isn't anything. I don't know that there is something.
I was going to say that's the most powerful thing that I've found is like when I'm just able to admit that I don't know, it almost puts me in a place of power. Like it's like acceptance and like a letting go of the resistance that comes from not knowing.
Exactly, that I could laugh about it after I say like I really just don't know.
No, I remember the first time that I told myself that I had all those questions that we just posed, like, and then one day I finally concluded, like, you you don't know. Like, the fact that I don't know is like alleviation. It was like my soul had, my body had been lifted from my soul, and they were finally like came together as one. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you can live now.
And I feel like, I mean, some of the experiences that I've had in psychedelic states, or just in the states where I, you know, I've felt something where I feel like I do know, it's something, the thing I know is something that I couldn't necessarily put to language or to words or to explain to anyone. It was more just like a feeling. At least that's been my experience.
Agreed. Yeah. You're able to tap into something, and it's on you. It's you questioning all the things that you have going on, and you having be confronted with them head on, saying, "Oh wow, I may have not been able to see this about myself before, but it's being thrust into my face, and I can either handle it and deal with it now, or you know, going over that the means of control." And I've been inside of a trip. You know, it's like going over. It's like 20 hours in. I might have pushed it. Maybe I pushed it. Okay, let me be acceptance that this is it. I'm done. I'm going to be here forever. And slowly, your means of control lets down. You start to come down. And you're like, oh, shit. It was just all in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
So, Brian, you did ayahuasca have you done it a few times or once?
I've done ayahuasca a few times, yeah. Not back-to-back sessions. Like, I would ultimately like to try, you know, going on a vision quest and having, like, I feel like you have a better, or you go deeper into the medicine when you use it cumulatively, like throughout the course of a week or so. But I've done three sessions, and I did like one a year for the last few years. I didn't this past year, but like I think 13, 14, 15, I did one a year.
How do you think that like inspired maybe who, like your trip today? Did that have any inspiration in your trip or into who you became that led you into wanting to travel and live as a means for travel? And
I think I dabbled down the path of psychedelic exploration more so out of curiosity and just kind of a not as a recreational thing, like to get high or something, like more so like they call it medicine, you know, at least that's what's known to where it's native to, you know, in the Amazon is like that's the way that they would look at it. And you know, it's a really tough thing, so it's like it's not something that you would do recreation anyway. Like it takes beats the shit out of your body, you know, like, but, my experience with it was more just trying to like understand myself and, understand the universe and try and learn from it. And that's what I went into it with. Like, and, I feel like every time there were lessons that came out of it, and now I'm sort of at the stage where I kind of feel like, cause I mean, some people go into these things and like, yeah, if you are addicted, like I said, to like heroin, like it's having like a lot of these psychedelic drugs are having really positive effects on like curing that. So there are like certain, you know, just medicinal value of it. But if you're just someone who's like me, who was kind of just curious from a philosophical perspective or like trying to learn about life and the universe, like you can't go in thinking like, oh, I'm going to take this and then I'm going to solve everything, because that's not how it works. It's more like it's going to give you the tools. It's going to give you some messages, but you still need to put the work in. So I kind of feel like I'm at the stage now where like, I've gotten the messages, and like it's like what Alan Watts says, like once you get the message, hang up the phone. Like I don't need to keep doing psychedelics to learn the lessons I've learned. What I need to do is I need to take those lessons and I need to implement them into my life. I need to go out and be the person that I know I can be.
That's what I felt the most, that exact way after ayahuasca. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't feel the need to go out and do this again. You know, I did three ceremonies in three nights, and it went deeper and deeper in the medicine every night. But after I did that, because I had a 6-month preparation before. I studied up on it. I was writing down in notepads, this is what's happening in my life right now. I'm not playing basketball anymore. And I actually ruptured my kidney a few months before this happened. So it's like, I'm still going to go down there. I'm still going to go do this. You know, you're thinking, you know, maybe this is something that's been known to heal different medical ailments as well. But again, you know, once you're actually in that moment, you know the whole science behind it, and you know from other personal accounts of what happens and what goes on. I remember being really misty-eyed, you know, and I had three buddies there in the tent with me, and I'm just like, I'm myself, like, here we go, like, plant, you know, like, you're praying to it, you're meditating on it, it's like, you know, I'm ready to see this, and going over all the things I'd written down and talked about for the last 6 months, what I liked, what I didn't like, and it was just thrown at me. And, yeah, from crying to tears to bliss to clarity, clairvoyance, like, I went through it all, and it was one of those, like, I cannot wait to get back to the real world now. I cannot wait to put all this stuff into action in place. And, you know, I've definitely ingested different psychedelics since then, but it's definitely been on you know, much more of a basis of friends, you know, like a cultural, like a tradition almost, like doing it like that. But as far as seeing what I wanted to see and do what I wanted to do, like that stuff there, it cleared the air.
Yeah, it's a very sacred thing. And it should be treated with a ton of respect.
But hasn't been, like, the ceremonies becoming a little bit more mainstream? Like,
it is, and I think that there's a whole dark side to the world of psychedelics, too. Like, I mean, like I said, it's something that's very sacred, and it can be taken advantage of. It can be used in the wrong way. It can be abused.
It's just like the music festival. But you'd see some kids, but maybe, you know, there are some kids that OD on it, or some kids that might not get a clean substance or clean chemical that they're ingesting. And but you again get to look from a deeper angle, like, why is it that this person is ingesting all these things? Are they trying to explore the bounds of their consciousness, of their physical self, to see how far they can push themselves, to see how much bliss or how much ecstasy they can actually feel and enjoy, you know? And it's like, comes down to what's the right and wrong way to be a human. You know, these are actually laws and bills that are passed in the place where people have to go to that dark side, and, you know, talk to someone on a street corner in order to find something that's going to help them reach a certain state of mind, state of being that they can't normally reach. Yeah, it's like a cheat. It's like a shortcut to get there that you can do through meditation, hours and years that can get you to those states people describe and they talk about. But, you know, what's wrong with that shortcut? What's wrong with you getting there? Why is there someone telling you that you can't do that, you can't experience that?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with it. I just think that there's a lot of fear around it because of some of the ways in which it has been abused and misused, and also just a lot of propaganda that surrounds the idea of psychedelics and how they're linked into just this idea of drugs, quote unquote, where it's like not all drugs are made equal and not everything should be called a drug in a negative, you know, a lot of people have a negative connotation with the word drugs. So when you just hear like psychedelic drugs, it's like, oh, all drugs are bad, you know? But if you're, I mean, the people who are using this stuff, like these natives, you know, they don't think of it as a drug. They think of it as a form of medicine that's, you know, it's a very sacred thing to them, you know?
You know, whether it's once a month, once a week, yeah. We're all sitting by the fire, you know, we got a harvest coming in. It's time, because maybe that harvest isn't going to come in next year. You know, maybe let's have a nice ceremony and let's enjoy everything that's around us and enjoy and ask ourselves what's going on inside of us, if we like what we don't like, what's going on. And again, that's just... So there's a whole different level, a whole different civilization, yeah. Society.
And setting too is huge. Like, I mean, the people who are treating this as medicine aren't saying go, you know, take psilocybin and go to a DJ and go crazy with hundreds of thousands of people around you. Not to say that you can't learn from that, because it can definitely be a valuable experience. I just think that in that setting, it is creating a way different experience for you than it would be if you were to, like what you were doing, where you were writing down things that were happening in your life. You know, you were taking it very seriously. You were traveling to where the actual medicine is native, and you had a shaman who was administrating it to you. That's a way different experience than, you know, just taking mushrooms with your friends or LSD with your friends at some concert or festival. And again, I'm not saying that that's necessarily wrong or that should necessarily be illegal either. I'm just saying that when you do it that way, you bring in a lot of different variables to your experience that could be profoundly negative, or you could have a profoundly positive experience too. You know, it's just like, I don't think that's for everyone. Like, I know myself, in those settings, like, it would be very difficult, very, very difficult to trip in a setting like that.
It's funny you say that, because, like, Chris Ryan has a very, very similar look and appeal to psychedelics and ingesting them in those different settings and surroundings where to take them. Where, I remember on a podcast, like 2 or 3 years ago, said something very similar to that. Did you guys talk about that at all? I know recently you're on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really dabble into psychedelics too much, but yeah, I mean, that whole like community of guys like Rogan and Duncan Trussell and Chris Ryan and just their conversations is kind of what opened up my perspective, because I actually, like, growing up, you know, I drank and partied and stuff when I was in my younger days, but I always kind of looked at, you know, weed and anything else as like bad, just because that's the way that my mind had been sort of trained from an early age, you know, that drinking is fine and exactly that's legal and like, yeah. You're just having a drink and you're partying. But in many ways, like, that's a drug that's just legal. That's way more harmful to you than something that's, you know, I feel like weed, if it's used correctly, you know, can actually have a lot more benefits than something like alcohol would, you know. But I never, you know, I was trained the opposite, thinking that, like, oh, this is illegal and people who are doing this are bad, you know. So I never really, like, understood that until later in life.
That's where I gained that perspective about, you know, someone else experiencing the same exact thing. You know, they're being told this is always bad for them, it's never gonna, you're gonna die if you do this, it's terrible, don't do it. And then I have my first experience on one of these substances, like, and I had an amazing experience. Like, what else are these people that have told me that what's right and wrong? What else are they not telling me the truth on? Whether that's parents, teachers, and people you look up to in your community, or people that role models that surround you. And then imagine like a younger kid, 13, 14 years old, who's going through, you know, developing his body, puberty, people telling him he's got pimples on his face, he's not popular in school, people don't talk to him, he's not friendships, but he's able to ingest this marijuana. It's able to help him chill out, cool out. This isn't that bad. What else isn't bad? What else can I do and cannot do?
If they were wrong about that, what else are they wrong
about? And when you're, especially when you're a teenager, you're a rock star.
Especially when it comes out to be something good.
It's not going to hurt me. Yeah. I'm not going to die. It's not going to affect me. Especially when you have only one good experience on it. And then because the stuff's illegal, it's not sanctioned. There's nothing to say how much is good, how much is bad, what's going to hurt you, what's a toxicity.
That's the problem. Yes. Is that it's not... people aren't educated on it, so it is easy to misuse stuff when it's illegal and there's not really good information that's mainstream. That's why, I don't know if you guys have heard of MAPS, but I'm like...
MAPS, yeah.
Rick Doblin,
yeah. And they're doing all this research on psychedelic studies, and it's, you know, really fascinating, and it's just great that someone's out there, like, actually doing that and, you know, moving us forward and giving us actual, real good information about these drugs instead of just, like, what... people believe based on propaganda that's been going on for years and years. You know,
it's crazy if you think about it. Like, look at like a conservative news network or any news network. They're really patriotic to the soldiers, and that we should be donating to this fund and that fund, whether it's whatever soldier charity or foundations are in the VA. And the VA is out of money. We're not giving enough money. But you look at from the science and the research and the experimentation that they've done with psilocybin or MDMA with treating this PTSD, the post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think psilocybin and MDMA are both like at 85 to 83 to 88% heal rate, where, you know, one to three sessions with a psychiatrist and ingesting these chemicals, and there's no more PTSD. People are cured. Not, okay, you need to come back in, you know, at once a month. They're cured. But you don't see that on these news networks. You just hear about 22 people a day are dying still. 22 people a day are killing themselves from post-traumatic stress when there is something that's being researched on a small, small basis still, but it's having this amount of success.
Yeah.
But something like that can't be talked about because of different money that's allocated from cigarettes.
Unfortunately, yeah. Well, I mean, we're drinking big alcohol. Pharmaceutical companies that make a lot of money on prescribing other drugs. You know, I understand why all these things are going on, and it's a shame that a lot of times it's like, just follow the money and you'll get most of the answers to why things are happening the way they are.
I've seen that in my study in nutrients too, just about what's all the different chemicals that we don't actually need that they prescribe to especially older adults, males and females, like statins. And it doesn't actually reduce the risk of getting a heart attack or any cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to reduce your cholesterol. So it's going to make you sexually repressed because you're not going to have that much testosterone. So now you see all these like testosterone and male hormone clinics popping up everywhere. Or they're going to give you some Viagra. And then that's the second top selling drug beside the cholesterol reducing drug. So they're just giving you something. And then we're going to sell the most of something else, even though it's only men, it's half the demographics. We're still going to find a way to make money off of you without doing that. We talked about this with D. Fish, like just... are these doctors actually just sending you through? Are they just pushing you through the machine because they have so many people to deal with and so many people to talk with? Or, you know, are they victims too because they don't know about nutrients? They don't know about what actually is this pill? I got to see all these people. This pill is going to help this guy. It's going to keep them going longer. And people are actually living longer. So am I doing a good thing? Am I doing a bad thing? Is it a positive, a negative? Is the doctor really just trying to kill somebody, or is he not just giving them the proper information?
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
It's tough to question, though. It's like an ethical question. Like, is it a good or a bad thing? People are living longer. We're healthier than we've technically ever been. But the doctor's just pushing people through. And comes with balance and saying, okay, we put it to this extreme. We were able to get people to this certain health. But now, I mean, we're gonna see in the next upcoming years, like 2 decades, with obesity and diabetes and how much money we're allocating towards healthcare, it's ridiculous, especially when food can be your medicine. We're putting it all towards these pills. It's going to be interesting. We spend the most on healthcare anywhere in the world, and we complain that people shouldn't have free healthcare, and they shouldn't be able to get just affordable care whenever they need it, when they should, or when they have, when they accessible, when it's accessible to them.
Yeah, it does feel like the system is pretty ass backward. It's, you know, it's driven by profit instead of actually taking care of people, which is you know, another thing like I've realized too, like when we both dislocated our shoulders, but when I had mine in the United States, you know, I ended up getting thrown into a emergency room, and I'm sitting there for 4 hours, and then, you know, I'm given a Percocet, and they finally pop it back in, and I get a bill in the mail for $7,000. You know, I did it in Nicaragua, and like, they're just like, sit me down, pop it back in, and I try to pay them, and they're like, no, we just help people. Like, it's not. And obviously the education is much better here, and like the doctors and this, but their system is based on more on just like keeping people healthy, and ours is based more on profit. So it's like, I don't know.
We've mastered the business side of it. Yeah, keeping people constantly revolving door.
It's
coming
consumer
in, coming
driven,
in.
Just like the rest of our society. And definitely when I was in Costa Rica, and the only thing, they did the same exact thing to me. The only thing they tried to do is, we don't want your money, but you got to pay to borrow the crutches for my ankle. So I had to pay $20 for a week or 2 weeks of crutches, which $20 in Costa Rica, I think at the time, was like still a lot of money, right? But it's not $7,000 for a pill. But it's driven, it's still consumer driven. It's driven by like, it does have, I mean, to switch up and pivot, but it does have positive effects. Like, we do reap the benefits of very quality doctors, but I don't know necessarily if the doctors, not that they don't have the best intentions, because to become a doctor, I think you have to have the best intentions, but I think that the doctors, they don't necessarily keep up on what they need to be helping people for. They're trying to fit five people into an hour, right? Into the doctor's room.
But aren't they trying to, don't they have to keep studying up? Yeah, you look at someone like
exactly.
business, they get the constant certifications and testing.
Things in medical are literally changing as fast as our social media accounts are changing. So how can a doctor have time to keep up with that while maintaining a full regimen of people? And then doctors also run their own practices, right? So,
and they get sued, the malpractice that they put in there for insurance.
Yeah, and so all that is where the money gets funneled from. Like, you can see how difficult it can be and why they might need to get paid so much. But I think that's not like a problem it's the problem of the system, if you want to call it a problem. It's we are consumer driven, and consumer driven is a very positive thing. It creates innovation. It allows us to find solutions to problems, because if you have a problem and multiple people are competing to improve it, you need to find, there are medicines that are penicillin, right? Medicines that were driven, that have saved people and that were needed.
Changed the game completely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those are positive. It's just like kind of the drivers behind it need to be rerouted a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. I feel like it has a lot to do with our value system too.
Yeah.
It's like, instead of, not to say, like you said, they don't have like necessarily bad intentions, you know, when they go to try and be a doctor and they want to help people, but I feel like we value more so like this idea of material and business success more than anything. So everything's kind of driven by money, and that kind of like taints like what's actually being done, or like the pureness behind the intention. It's because I think there are a lot of people out there who are, like you said, like the doctor, maybe just prescribing things because it puts more dollars in his pocket too, and then they're drawing that, there's a weird line between that ethical side of things and that profitable business side of things.
But is a doctor doing, like, does a doctor wake up, and when they go into surgery, is a doctor waking up and going, I'm doing this for money because it gets money in my pocket? Or is a doctor in a flow state, a state that you were in while you were bike riding, while he's doing surgery? Maybe he gets that kind of, like, that kind of fluidity feeling in his body when he's doing that, the same way you do from your bike trip. Whereas maybe he doesn't get that same feeling when he has to go back and forth, and like, maybe it's like, you know, for us doing our regular day-to-day jobs when he's not in surgery, let me rephrase that, when he is working with patients that he has to do the same thing over and over again, that's mundane and boring, like that for him is like us doing our job. But when he's in surgery doing something unique and different, that's the same thing as riding the bike, that's the same thing as playing in the poker tournament, that's the same thing as playing in a basketball game for him. So maybe we just need more surgery.
Yeah, no, it certainly could be the case.
Yeah, like I think the novelty thing is what creates that state. Like, the doing something that you've prepped and trained for, but like this is the one time experience. Like this is it, right? Like, when you're in practice, you might be like kind of going through the motions sometimes when you're shooting a free throw and over again. But sometimes you'll be in the game shooting those free throws and you're like so zoomed in on that basket that.
Yeah, playing in front of 30,000 people, you never looked out in the crowd and were worried, you know, what someone was saying or doing. If anything, you're going to think and be worried about, like, I'm worried about my job right now. I got to be on this court and I better put something together. You know, I got to run this play. I can't let the guy score on me on defense. I got to do this role. I got to make sure James over there is going to make sure he cuts back door so I can hit him for this lob. Because if I don't do my job, I'm going to get out of the game. So, I mean, there's so much more important things and priorities than worrying about if someone's going to say you suck in the crowd, you know, or if this girl's winking at you. I got much more bigger fish to fry. But that's priorities right there. Brian Shea, we talked a lot today. We talked about the bike trip. We talked about the things we're going to solve, things we like, what we don't like, society. What are you going to leave the world with right now? What are you going to leave the bus riders with?
Yeah.
I would say just follow your bliss, do what you love, and kind of don't care too much about what other people think about it. It's just like in your heart, you know, every day ask yourself the question, like, what is it really that I want to do? And just try and follow that as much as you can, because I mean, it's tough sometimes and I struggle with it, but I always find that like I'm my best version of myself when I'm living from that heart space. And that's like kind of what, I mean, this is New Year's Eve, we're recording this, so like it's kind of a day of reflection of like over the past year. And I think about like the one thing this year that I tried to work on so much was like finding that difference between what my heart is telling me and what my head is telling me, and trying to live more from that heart space. And there were definitely times I did that this year. You know, I did some backpacking through Central America, I went on this trip, and there are other times that I was in my head space. And I find that, and it switches off day to day sometimes, you know, based on who you're around, what you're doing, sometimes just how your day starts, you know, like you get off to a bad start and then you can be in your headspace all day, you know? So I would just advise people to try and, you know, listen to the voices that are coming from that heart space as much as they can.
A question I like to ask, last time that you cried?
Wow, that's good. Wow. I ask myself this question sometimes and I honestly, off the top of my head, I can't remember. And it's bad, I think, when you've gone a long time without crying, because I think crying is really good.
Agreed.
Well, tonight's party, there are going to be tears then.
Yeah?
Giraffe tears.
Open a bucket. Yeah,
I honestly, like, I love when I can get myself to cry, like, because you feel something. And, like, feeling something is, like, it's what makes you human, you know? I know that the last time I cried was out of something of gratitude, but I can't remember the specific time. It wasn't, like, being hurt or, like, being upset. It was more like coming to the realization and like feeling, because a lot of times gratitude is like a thing you hear people say, like, oh, just like find gratitude, be thankful, write down the things you're thankful for. And like sometimes like you can do that and you can say I'm thankful, you are very aware that you have things that other people don't have, but you don't necessarily feel that gratitude until either it's taken away from you or like something happens that like really shows you and makes you feel what you have. You know, so yeah, I think the last time I cried, though, was something, I think it was something of a realization of just like friends and family and things that I have. And that like can sometimes bring on the tears when I feel that.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Any place where everybody can find you?
Yeah, just livehigh.org is the website. That's where we're doing everything. And we have all our social media in the upper right-hand corner. Just mostly Facebook, a little bit of Instagram. And I've been putting a lot of love into the Snapchat lately. And that's livehighbry. So just live high and then BRY.
No underscores.
No.
Yeah, we'll put it all in the show notes.
Yeah, it's great.
Awesome, man.
Appreciate it.
Dude, it was great to see you again.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Really enjoyed it.
Don't be too long. Awesome. But hey, seriously, get off the bus. Get out.
This is your stop.
Yeah.
Right. You didn't even pay to get on.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate the handout.
No problem, man. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
See you in 2017. We made it.
Woo! There it is. Another one in, another one done. B. Shea, Brian Shea, or just Shea. Thanks so much for coming on, man. You're an inspiration, and you're a powerful, powerful, powerful human. Always happy to see you. Always a pleasure sitting down and chatting with you. I'm glad everybody else could hear your amazing story and your amazing quest. Everyone else, thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this show, hit the subscribe button. And even more, you can share it with your friends. You can share it on all your social media pages. It goes towards supporting this podcast. You also have all the affiliates and sponsors.
You got Onnit, you got Amazon, you got Organifi, you got GopherKings. Head over to the website and check out all the places where you can find our sponsored affiliates as well as our show. Bam, episode 15. We'll see you next week. Love you guys.
Is the moment for those who...